Coming up next, another edition of Reaching Out with Gregory Floyd, president of Teamsters Local 237.
Welcome to another edition of Reaching Out. Gregory Floyd, president, Local 237 Teamsters. With us, once again, a very special guest, District Attorney of Staten Island, Michael McMahon. Michael, welcome back to Reaching Out.
Thank you, Greg. Great to be with you again. Good to see you. Virtual, but it's good to see you.
Good to see you also. Now, the last time you were on, I just wanted to go back to something we spoke about, and I want to see how that's working out. You talked about the changes to the law when it comes to victims and, I would say, the accused. Someone breaks into your house, they get caught, they and their attorney are allowed to come back to your house to view the scene for defense. So tell us about that law. Is that law still in existence? And how has it been working with some of the cases that you've had?
Sure. What you're talking about is changes to the discovery law here in New York State, which was part of a multi-pronged package that the state legislature passed in the end of the last decade. There were really three main parts. It was bail reform, so-called. It was discovery changes, how we exchange information and what information is available and when to the accused, and then also raise the age, how we treat minors, people under legal age in the criminal justice system. And let's face it, we don't want anybody to spend any extra time incarcerated because they don't have the money to pay bail, but they never gave judges discretion. Public safety is not an issue. And we see recidivists being captured and released time and time again. When it comes to the discovery, we talk about the ability of the accused to visit someone's home, to examine the premises, or to get witnesses' names early on in the process, putting those witnesses, victims as well at risk. Those laws have not been changed, and that still exists. We do fight as well as we can to get protective orders in those cases. So that aspect of it has just meant more work for my assistant district attorneys, because here in Staten Island, we're fairly successful in getting those protective orders. But discovery itself has a much broader impact in that we agree that we should be turning over information as soon as we have it. In fact, before these changes, we had an open file discovery policy here in Richmond County. Whatever we had, we would turn over as soon as we could. But this law forces us to go out and get really inane, mundane material that has no relevance, no materiality to the prosecution or defense of the case. And it's created an incredible workload for our assistants with unworkable timeframes. If someone's being held in on bail or remanded, within 20 days, we have to get information from the police department, from the medical examiner, and a list goes on of all types of evidence, and turn it over. And so it's a very frustrating process, and it's caused a morale problem with the assistants, so much so that we've lost, in this year alone, we lost 34% of our assistants because they just couldn't do the work. So it's been a real problem. The good news is that the governor fought for, and the legislature did provide some extra funding to our offices so we can pay the assistant district attorneys at least a livable wage, if you will. They were the lowest paid attorneys in the city system, and now we've got them up on par at least with corporation counsel and the agency attorneys. So we've been able to staunch that attrition somewhat, but we still deal with those discovery laws. And then I mentioned bail reform, and the recidivists keep getting out and back and engaging in antisocial behavior, if not violent behavior. And then with Raise the Age, there's no accountability in the system for young people. Again, I don't want to lock them up, but what I want to do is hold them accountable. Right now, if you're a 16-year-old and you're carrying a loaded 9mm with an extended magazine and a gun loaded into a bullet loaded into the chamber, you're sent to family court and you're released. Last week, a week and a half ago, we had a very tragic day here on Staten Island. We had a 13-year-old boy was stabbed and killed on a bus, and a 17-year-old girl was shot in the head in their home. And on the same day, we had a 16-year-old arrested with a loaded gun. He had to be released. So he wasn't held accountable. He got a signal from society that it's okay to carry a loaded gun. What's he going to do with it next time? So it still remains a challenge for us here out in Staten Island. We are still the safest part of the city, the safest community of 500,000 people in the country. But our crime numbers are up. And it's because many of these laws have made our jobs incredibly difficult, and that of the police department as well.
You mentioned the younger children going to family court and being released. Mm-hmm. The gangs have picked up on that. And what they do is they give the guns to the younger children, and they're carrying the guns, holding it for the older gang members, and they've taken advantage of that. Criminals are really smart. They know how to adapt to the law that's given. And there should be some kind of something taken into account that these things are happening, and they should just change the law to say if you're a known member of a gang and you're carrying a gun, something should happen to you other than you should go to adult court, not family court, and there should be considerations for carrying weapons, not treated as children in family court. These are different circumstances.
And the thing is, Greg, I will say this too, that maybe they should still be treated as children, but in a way that holds them accountable, right? Okay. So you have family court, then you have adult court, but we also have what's called the youth part, which is sort of an in-between. That's where those individuals should go. They should be held account. They should be mandated to go into some sort of program, counseling. Let's dig into the case and see why this young person is doing it. You know, as you mentioned, it's so bad with the older crew members that, you know what they call the young people who carry the guns for them? There's a term now, they call them holsters, because they know that they can carry the gun and not be held accountable and deliver it when needed. And that's what we're at. That's what these laws have created. So it's a terrible situation. It's across the state. We've seen the DA from Albany, David Suarez, who came into office really as a sort of a progressive reformer, speak very vocally about this law as well. He just had a double murder that was committed by a young person who had been released because of raising age with a gun possession case. So it's having incredible impacts across the state and here in Staten Island as well.
Now, that double murder is not being tried in family court, is it?
No. That now is up in adult court, although the young people at sentencing, there'll still be consideration of their age. So, and that's fine. That's the way the law has always been. They'll still be held accountable and face significant prison time, but their age is taken into consideration. That's the way the law used to be. But that young person who pulled that trigger, ended up pulling that trigger, there could have been some sort of not interference, but some sort of intervention, if you will, into that young person's life. And that opportunity was lost. You know, we believe here in Staten Island that when people are arrested for a crime, they have to be held accountable. But it's also a very important moment in time, an inflection point, if you will, that maybe we can change that behavior if we look at what's the reasons behind the person's criminal activity. Some people, no matter what we do, they are recidivist career criminals. They have to be in prison. But many people, it's because of a broken family structure, addiction, illness, mental health, poverty, lack of education. The list goes on and on. Maybe we can address that. And these arrests leading up to the fatal crimes, fatal violent crimes, they are missed opportunities. And that's what the Raise the Age law said. Because, you know, you can have a young person, 16 years old, and commit 15 misdemeanors and five, medium, felonies or low charge felonies. When they're finally arrested for that violent crime, the judge doesn't even see that record. So they see it as if this is their first time in the court system. So that is not addressing young people who are in crisis. And look, the victims, say the bus case we had, right, where a young 13-year-old was stabbed. I had a 14-year-old shot in a schoolyard this summer. Their lives are lost and shattered, and their families are shattered, but the defendants as well, the young people who are committing these crimes, their families, their communities are also shattered. We need to get in and do something about it. And when they passed the Raise the Age law, they said that they would provide resources for the family courts to provide some intervention and help to these young people who are committing crimes, but the state hasn't even ponied up half of the money that they promised. So Albany created this problem. with laws that were not thought through, without hearings, without listening to the DAs, without listening to probation, without listening to educators, listening to anybody. They just passed these laws in the middle of the night. Most of them were stuck in the budget, right, where there are no hearings. You know how that works out there, Greg.
Yes.
And there you are. So it's bad legislation. We call it legislative malpractice. And the ramifications are reverberating through our society today.
Now, you've held the office of New York City Council, and you've also held the office as a congressman in Washington, D.C., but you have not worked in Albany, correct?
Well, I did. I was a legislative counsel to an assembly member for 3 years. So for 3 years, I did go up there and work there. So I kind of know how things go, although that was, you know, a generation ago. I was a young attorney when I did that. So I have a little sense of it, but I never worked there as a representative. But I have a sense of what they're doing. And the legislators there, instead of holding thoughtful, meaningful hearings, instead of talking to the people who are in the know on these issues, they don't have to do everything that I think they should do. But they should at least listen to us. They should get our opinion on things, and they should. But they don't do that. They look at their cell phones and social media, and whatever which way the social media winds are blowing, and the recent headline, that's the way they legislate. And it's not thoughtful. It's not meaningful, and it's hurting the society, in the great state of New York, and for our city, and certainly for us here in Staten Island.
Yeah, the reason I brought that up is because I wanted to. And I wanted our audience to understand how much experience you have on all three levels of government, local, state, and federal, that your opinion in this matter really, really, really matters. And how has all of these offices and levels of government helped you serve as district attorney of Staten Island?
They've made the job much more difficult, to be honest. We were able, one of the things I ran on and we accomplished was that, you know, with Staten Island being the forgotten borough, you know, that's our mindset here. And the DA's office at that time was terribly underfunded. So we were able to increase the budget to put it on par per capita by crime rate with staffing of the other offices. So we did have success there and got some help from the city at that time. But the laws that they have passed, the approach that they have taken since then to criminal justice and to our office as well, has been more hurtful than helpful. And you see it every day in the, you know, the cases that continue to perplex us because there are people committing crimes that, in, you know, 5 years ago were not committing crimes, and now they are. And the answer, you have to ask, what changed? So certainly we had COVID. And that has impacts, right, on this sort of generation of young people. But that alone doesn't explain it. It's also because they know that there's no accountability. The older people, as we say, use them as gun holders or holsters, as I mentioned, they're called. And there's no accountability whatsoever. And then, listen, that's true across the board. The shoplifter who shoplifts 20 times is not held accountable and is told, go on your merry way and do it again. And that hurts the store owner. And we see in communities, especially the communities of color, the demographically the poorer communities, they're losing their pharmacies and their drugstores and their supermarkets because those store owners can't stay in business anymore. And even for the average citizen who wants to go into a store and see the shaving cream and the razors, in my case, locked up and go through that hassle. It's a uncomfortable feeling. It's a terrible vibe in our city right now that we're not safe. Chaos is ruling, and a lot of that rests on the doorstep of our state legislators and our city legislators to some extent as well. And the federal government certainly has not provided the necessary resources we need for our public housing, for our transportation systems, for the migrant community that's here now. So I think on all levels of government, we have failure. Not only by omission, but by commission as well.
You're listening to Reaching Out. I'm Gregory Floyd, President, Local 237 Teamsters. With us, our very special guest, Staten Island District Attorney Michael McMahon. What is your office doing to help make Staten Island residents and businesses less fearful?
Yeah. So, you know, one of the things that I learned from my other positions in government, and one of the reasons I ran for DA was communication is so important, and explaining to people what it is that the district attorney does, what we can and cannot do, what is going on in individual cases, but then in a broader sense and trends that we see in the community. And that's something that we've really stepped up our game. We set up a community partnership unit with a communications team, and they are out in the community attending community meetings, explaining what the office is doing, answering questions. The DA's office is not sort of this hidden away monolithic place that nobody knows how to approach. If people have questions, they ask us, and we are having that communication because it's so important for us to be successful. We have to have the trust of the community. And as we know, in the cases, the George Floyd case, the Garner cases, all those instances that we saw, that trust had been strained, cracked, and almost broken. And what we've done is work hard to rebuild that trust, to have that sense in the community that what we're doing, the reasons for it, we'll explain it. And then also dealing with the issues. You know, a lot of people, their issues are, sure, we're worried about crime, serious crimes, so the home break-ins, the burglaries, the car thefts, and even here, thanks to our friends in Albany, our murder numbers are up, and those are major concerns for folks. But there's also the quality of life crimes, right? Noisy gangs in the groups in the neighborhood, litter, graffiti, illegal dumping, cars being abandoned. And we work on those quality of life issues as well, because we think that a clean, orderly community is also a much safer community. We want people to have the sense that we care about everything. That's why we're working to bring a community justice center here to Staten Island, to make it sort of a beacon of a place where people can go when they have issues, that they can find help, whatever the issue may be, and support. So we're doing that. And then we've also built collaborations with different sectors of the society to deal with issues. So let's say the opioid epidemic, right? And now fentanyl exacerbating that. Look, in America right now, amongst people 25 and 40 years old, overdoses is the major cause of death. We saw an increase on Staten Island last year, over 150 deaths. We have the second highest, overdose rate in the city. We had the highest for a while. And so this is a major, major issue. You can't prosecute your way out of that problem. You can't treat your way out of that problem. You need to collaborate both sides, if you will, law enforcement, the provider community, the healthcare community. So we set up a fentanyl task force to bring people together to find a solution to that problem. We've done the same thing with hate crimes. As we know, hate crimes are up dramatically, anti-Semitism in particular, historically also hate crimes against people of color. And we work very hard to prevent those. And then when they do occur, to make sure that they're properly prosecuted with the full charges, with that hate crime bump up, if you will, if the charge is appropriate. So with precision prosecution and community dialogue, we're addressing those issues. And that's something that the DA's office is sort of the platform we have here as a chief law enforcement officer, but also connected to the community. We're allowed to, we are able to effectuate rather well, I think.
And what would you need from, I would say, state and local governments to help you stem the problem of this, overdose epidemic?
Yeah, so, they released some of the opioid settlement funds. You know, Attorney General Letitia James was part of a cohort of attorney generals who sued the really evil drug companies that really fueled that crisis in this country by pushing these OxyContin and drugs like that out onto the market. They released the first tranche of money from that, and nothing's coming from Staten Island. So we would need resources so that we can build out the provider community to make sure that someone who needs treatment can get treatment. I have a program called the HOPE program, which is an at-arrest offer of diversion. Meaning we won't prosecute you if you go get assessed and agree to undertake a program that's established just for you, tailored just for you. But the problem is, and that's since we started that, over 2,000 Staten Islanders have gotten out of the criminal justice system and into help. But I need more support in that area. I need more recovery beds, more treatment counselors. We need drug counselors in the schools. We need more so sort of drug trained experts in the police department. So we would need that to deal with it better. But they haven't, as always, they They don't effectuate programs that are meaningful, in my opinion. They don't consult with us. They throw the money at things like safe injection facilities. Well, guess what? They don't work. There's no data that shows that they work. They cause an incredible vitriolic dialogue in the community and sort of set us back a long way that we've accomplished in reducing the stigma around drug addiction. And they're absorbing a lot of the resources that can be put to better use. But, you know, it's a good soundbite and it's a good tweet on social media. And that's the policies that they effectuate.
What are some of the things that you would like to accomplish in your third term as Staten Island District Attorney?
Sure. So, and you know, even as we talked about what to do with those three levels of government, if I could just inject a little common sense into what they do and how they approach things, I would consider myself extremely successful. So what we need to accomplish here is to continue to build out support, mentoring, school resources so that these young people who are disconnected from society right now because they have a very weak family or no family structure, they're in failing schools, they do not have the basic tools from education to read or write, we need to connect them back to society. So I would love to see, we started the Saturday Night Lights program here, we are doing what we can, but I want to see society get more focused on dealing with these young people who are really becoming a lost generation. That would be part of it. We need to bring more focus on the fentanyl crisis. We will continue to do that. We are working on that community justice center, as I mentioned. And those are just a few of the things that we want to do in the next term.
And we have about 2 minutes left. In those 2 minutes, I would say you're doing a tremendous job. You've given us a lot of insight into what's wrong with the law to raise the age and how they could tweak it. If there are any legislators out there that would like to help in this crime problem with youth, what would you suggest they do?
So they can call me. My office's number is published. Most of the legislators have my cell phone number. They can go to statenislandda.org and look at our different programs, what we're doing. And reach out to me that way and just have a discussion about how the laws that they pass need to be adjusted. And it's not that difficult to do, really, but they have to have the will. I think, you look at the vape shops, right? So I read a story today where a lot of the legislators from Albany are complaining that in their district, the vape shops have grown up like mushrooms after spring rain in a forest, right? So it's their fault. They legalized marijuana without building out the regulatory system and the enforcement system that we needed. So we said that from the get-go. When they were passing the laws, we cried from the rooftops, don't do it until you build out the system. Learn from what the other state's failures were. And now you have these vape shops all across the country filled with cash, filled with illegal marijuana because they're selling it and they don't have a license to do so. And they're a bane in everyone's neighborhood, but also there's now suspicion that a lot of that cash is being funneled overseas to fund terrorist organizations. So they created it, and now they're complaining about it. Well, you know what? Figure out how to legislate, have a hearing, talk to the experts, figure out how to fix the mess that you created rather than now. And their solution is the police department should get more involved in the enforcement. These are the same people who wanted to cut back the police department, and now they want the cops to solve the problem, which is what they always do. We also, by the way, we need more police. We're down in headcount across the city. Staten Island is still down close to, somewhere between 10 and 20% where we were in 2019 and where we need to be to do the job. And that's something that I would also like, I will work on in my next term, to get full headcount for our police department and our prosecutors and our probation department and all the rest.
Thank you. You've been listening to Reaching Out. I'm Gregory Floyd, President, Local 237 Teamsters. With us, our very special guest, Staten Island District Attorney Michael McMahon. Michael, you were so informative. We're going to ask you in the future to come back again, and we're going to see where we are with some of your suggestions. And if we haven't made progress, we're going to kick this can once again and see if we can get somebody to listen. Thank you for coming back to Reaching Out.
Lending your voice to this, Greg. Thank you so much. Good to see you. Thanks to you and your team.
See you also.
Thanks for listening, and don't forget to tune in again each and every Saturday at this same time for another edition of Reaching Out with Gregory Floyd, president of Teamsters Local 237.